Economic data, moving markets.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Let's check numbers. Dow is up about 0.5%, more than 40 points at this hour. S&P 500 up about 0.5% as well. The Nasdaq up about 1.25%. European shares holding their own. The FTSE's up more than 3%. London and Frankfurt up as well. Asian stocks went in different directions. Nikkei down, Hang Seng up. Markets here at home responding to some economic numbers and polls out today. And Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson joins us now from New York with more on those barometers and what people are saying in the midst of this fallout. Jeremy, things are in the green out of the gate. I guess Wall Street's forgotten about all the doom and gloom in Detroit.
Yeah, it looks that way. And we're now back to a busy week of economic indicators, a lot of them coming out this week. The big daddy of them all is going to be the unemployment number for March, which comes out on Friday. Now, today, we did have some more bad news from the Case-Shiller Index of Housing Prices. Prices declined 19% between January of last year and January of this year, which, Steve, was more or less in line with expectations.
And, Jeremy, we have consumer confidence numbers coming out in just a few minutes, right?
That's right, and we may see a little bit of a bounce at the top of the hour on Wall Street. Of course, interesting after the huge drops we saw yesterday. I did speak with Dan Cook a few moments ago. He's a senior market analyst at IG Markets in Chicago, who provided a little bit of context.
It's still really a trader's market rather than an investor's market. And whenever we have a trader's market, we will have a run-up followed by quick profit-taking. And we may have some very positive news today, which will pop it back up. But again, we have so much. Everybody's still kind of on edge.
On edge, of course, but hoping for some good news on consumer confidence. And that poll from the Washington Post ABC News this morning did give us a little clue of what we might see. It found the highest level in the last 5 years of people who think the economy is heading in the right direction.
All right. We shall see. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson joining us from New York. Jeremy, thanks.
You're welcome.
All right. By the way, President Obama is off to London today ahead of a big economic summit later in the week. The Group of 20 meeting really includes political and economic leaders from more than 20 countries trying to get a handle on the global fallout. But lately, there's been more disagreement than anything over stimulus and regulation. Seems like payments for credit cards have been going through the roof, and Congress wants to tighten restrictions on card issuers who unfairly raise interest rates or fees on outstanding balances. The Senate Banking Committee today looks at a set of consumer credit protections. Lenders say the measures would be counterproductive. Here's Marketplace's John Dimsdale.
The Senate bill would prohibit universal default. That's when trouble with one credit card ends up raising the rates on all the cards in your wallet. Linda Sherry is with Consumer Action.
We think it's terribly unfair, the fact that the card in question, on which you may not even have been late once and have been paying as agreed, can raise your rate because of that.
But credit card issuers say the Senate's restrictions will hinder their ability to charge borrowers for the risk that they may not pay back their loan. Scott Talbot with the Financial Services Roundtable says the result will be higher interest rates for everyone.
If you clamp down on the ability of the industry to price risk based on the consumer's ability or their risk profile, then what will happen is those with better credit scores will end up subsidizing those with lower credit scores.
The Senate failed to pass similar credit card protections last year, but the bill's sponsors say the economy's decline, as well as a more sympathetic White House, means the bill is likely to pass this year. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Ford said today it's offering a payment protection plan for its credit customers. It's an effort to boost sales and reassure customers who wouldn't otherwise buy a car because they're worried about their job. The automaker will cover payments up to $700 each month for up to a year on any new Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury vehicle if an owner loses his or her job. It looks a lot like Korean automaker Hyundai's deal that allows buyers to return a car within a year if they can't make the payments due to a job loss or disability. Listening to the Morning Report on Tuesday, March 31st, 2009, at marketplace.org. President Obama is off to London today ahead of a big economic summit later in the week. The Group of 20 meeting really includes heads of state from more than 20 countries trying to get a handle on the global economic fallout. Our man in London, Stephen Beard, joins us now. Stephen, it seems like we keep hearing about what won't be coming out of Thursday's meeting.
Well, as you say, it's easier to say what is not going to come out of it. I mean, we're not going to get what President Obama was initially pushing for, a big increase in stimulus packages in other countries. There's just simply too much disagreement over that. The Germans, the French, the Chinese say, no, we're already in the process of pumping a lot more money into our economies. Let's wait and see what happens.
Obviously, Stephen, they're gathering there for a purpose. What? Why are they getting together?
They've come to have tea with the Queen, I think is the answer. No, clearly there is a purpose, and some material things will emerge, it seems, from the summit. It looks as if there's going to be an agreement to increase funding for the International Monetary Fund. There'll no doubt also be a solemn commitment to free trade and a pledge to not to revert to protectionism, and also a broad statement of principles about how to better regulate financial markets. But on the regulatory front, nothing very dramatic, it seems.
So given the big business environment today, why doesn't there seem to be this big consensus on regulation?
Well, I think all the participating leaders agree that we've just lived through a major regulatory failure, but there are just too many disagreements about how to tackle this internationally. In fact, today we had the story that French President Nicolas Sarkozy is threatening to walk out of the summit unless he gets an agreement to set up a global financial regulator. Now, that's not going to happen because the US opposes it, so do the Brits. There is, however, agreement on one issue, and we're told that at this summit, a deal will be unveiled with 10 tax havens, including Switzerland, Liechtenstein, Monaco, and Andorra, to share a lot more information with the tax authorities of the rest of the G20 group. So it does seem there is one issue around which they all agree. After all, they all need to raise a lot more tax with all these stimulus packages. They would all love to see the tax havens go out of business.
Mm-hmm. Our European correspondent, Stephen Beard, joining us from London. Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
Twitter is a fast-growing social networking platform that allows individuals and businesses to broadcast short text messages to a group of followers. Now, software developers are creating Twitter applications that go beyond strictly human-to-human communication. From the Entrepreneurship Desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman reports.
Twitter allows you to send out text messages of up to 140 characters, called tweets, via cell phone or the internet. There are a lot of business applications for this. A tea shop in Wichita, for instance, tweets a weekly flavor poll to its customers, but there are other Twitter-based business models out there.
We decided to use the service along with our networked hardware to allow plants to send tweets.
That's right. She said plants tweeting people. Katie London teaches interactive media at NYU and co-founded a startup called Botanicals. It's a Twitter app that uses a sensor to measure moisture in potted plants.
A decision's made on the circuit board to send a tweet that, for example, the plant is in need of water.
After it drinks, the plant tweets thanks to its owner. Tweet a Watt monitors home energy use and reports it back to you via Twitter. There's a Twitter app for home security. A motion sensor tweets in case of break-in. Another can turn appliances on and off remotely. Twitter's simple open-source architecture means pretty much anything that can plug into the internet can tweet. Rodney Rumford is author of the book Twitter as a Business Tool.
Programmers could find a way to tie into the machine language level and interface that with real-world, let's call them life hack type of devices.
This means machines communicating with other machines, plants or animals communicating with us. It also means we can interact with the computers that crunch all the data being collected every minute on Twitter.
Tweet what you eat simply answers the question, what did you have to eat today?
Programmer Alex Ressi's new Twitter app lets you tweet everything that passes your lips. The program then crunches all that food data into an online calorie counter, meaning you can track your own diet goals up to the minute and compare your eating habits to others. Rodney Rumford says Twitter is allowing us to create new social intelligence about ourselves at breakneck speed.
They've really developed the tube, if you will, for this data to flow through.
Rumford's favorite toy, a GPS mapping program that tracks fellow tweeters in real time so you can go meet them for drinks or a movie, if you can put your cell phone down that long. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Today, we were supposed to learn the fate of General Motors' floundering Hummer brand. That is, until GM found itself with other pressing business on its plate, namely a 60-day presidential timetable to make a survival plan or face bankruptcy. The Hummer problem will have to be addressed soon because sales have already tanked. And given its dire state, GM doesn't need any more baggage. Here's Rico Galliano.
Oh, how the Hummer has fallen. Sales were down 68% in the first 2 months this year. Rick Kranz, an editor at Detroit's Automotive News, chalks it up to the powerful car's puny gas mileage.
When gasoline was at $4 or $5, $5.5 a gallon, people looked elsewhere for products and Hummer suffered.
By the time gas prices came down late last year, GM had already announced it was looking to unload the company. Kranz says that didn't exactly breed sales. Still, GM says they have bids on the table from other companies to buy Hummer. Analyst Michael Robinette of CSM Worldwide says any buyer would have a lot of work to do.
Hummer is a rough and ready vehicle, has a very muscular image, but really for Hummer to survive longer term, they're going to have to either expand the portfolio and make it a little bit more environmentally friendly, or slim it down and make it a niche brand.
In which case he imagines fewer Hummer models and few, if any, Hummer dealerships. Whether the brand lives or dies, though, it won't affect the military. GM owns the Hummer name and makes its own versions of the car, but a completely different company called AM General supplies Humvees to the armed forces. In Los Angeles, I'm Rico Galliano for Marketplace.
The company Lennar is the nation's second largest home builder, and it continues to be battered by the weak housing market. But Lennar is also offering what could be the first significant sign of improvement. As Jennifer Collins reports, it's a spin on buy low, sell high.
Lennar made a smart move at the height of the real estate boom. It sold most of its stake in a 15,000-acre tract of land north of Los Angeles, the kind of prime real estate that could have easily become a suburban village. Then the housing market collapsed, and the land holding company filed for bankruptcy. Today, Lennar's looking to make another smart move, buy back much of the land for a bargain. Marley Laufer represents the holding company and says the details need to be worked out.
But we certainly see it as a positive development in our Chapter 11 case.
The deal could eventually give a boost to Lennar. The company lost more than $1 billion last year. Greg Doyle is a market researcher with Hanley Wood.
We are at or very close to a bottom of this, at least close enough to a bottom to where I think having the discussion about getting back into the market is a valid strategy.
He says most of the large home builders he advises are already laying the groundwork to buy cheap plots of land on the market. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Ah, 'tis the time of the year for parents and students to decide about college. But in this economic fallout, that decision is causing some anxiety for parents who are looking for deals and for the four-year schools which are seeing smaller community colleges competing for dollars. Here's Emily Hanford of American Radio Works.
Kathy Moore is a counselor at Blake High School in suburban Maryland. As the price of college shot up over the past decade, she received more and more glossy brochures in the mail. Schools touting new athletic facilities, dorms with private bathrooms, fancy campus centers.
This is all glitz. But let's face it, our generation is used to all this.
They might need to start getting used to something else. Sekou Ba is an example. He started out at a four-year school in Pennsylvania. He had financial aid, but still had to borrow about $12,000. Watching the economy melt down last fall, he got nervous about graduating with lots of debt. So he transferred to a community college.
I mean, college is worth it. My parents have always told me education is the most important thing. But when colleges get ridiculous, I don't think it's worth it because you can get the same education somewhere else for way cheaper.
Ba now takes a full load of classes at Montgomery College in Maryland, where tuition is less than $4,000 a year. And he likes it. The community college doesn't keep track of how many students transfer from four-year schools, but enrollment is up nearly 10%, and officials expect even more students in the fall. And this has expensive private colleges feeling nervous.
Why should I send my child to your school when there's a public institution down the road that costs a lot less?
This is a question Mary Ellen Duffy gets a lot these days. She's director of financial aid at Albright College, a small liberal arts school in Reading, Pennsylvania. Tuition, room, and board add up to about $40,000 a year. To keep students coming, Albright has always had to offer a lot of financial aid. And next year, they're offering even more, and freezing staff and faculty salaries to do it. I'm Emily Hanford for Marketplace.
Hope you can check us out on Marketplace later today. Emily explores how some students are rethinking their college plans in light of the recession. That's ahead today on Marketplace. And you can check us out online, too, at our website, marketplace.org. And there you'll find our online host and blogger, Scott Jagow, with the Scratch Pad, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.